This is Radio IMCLA and the Community Voices Project, produced in association with KIL Radio. Today, we're pleased to be a part of No New Rounds Radio, a collaborative effort from the global network of IMCs, bringing radio from indie media around the world. The first hour of today's program will feature an interview conducted today, November 12th, by Sonali Kolhatkar of the Afghan Women's Mission, with Tamina Faril, a representative of RAWA, the Revolutionary Afghan Women's Association. Tamina is spending this week in Los Angeles raising awareness for her organization and the ongoing struggle of Afghan women, which began long before September 11th. In the second hour, Fernando Velasquez explores globalization and its effect on women in South America. The first hour of this program is in English. The second hour will be in Spanish. You can find the LAIMC at www.la.indymedia.org and KIL Radio at www.kilradio.org.
I want to ask you some questions about RAWA's work in Afghanistan and try to address the things that the major media, the mainstream media, don't necessarily get to, the more probing questions, because RAWA has a political analysis about the situation in Afghanistan since they're one of the oldest women's organizations there. And I think it's really important for us, especially as Americans, to understand where RAWA is coming from, understand RAWA's political analysis, and pay attention to that in our journey trying to understand what's happening today. So Afghanistan has experienced brutal war for the past 20 years, and there have been many different eras of conflict, from the Soviet invasion to the Soviet occupation to the subsequent pullout of the Soviets, followed by a puppet regime that was installed by the Soviets and then toppled by U.S.-backed mujahideen, and a brutal civil war, and now the Taliban's rule. And of course, now we're seeing a bombing campaign in Afghanistan by the United States. Which has been, in your opinion, the worst era for Afghans, and why?
I think that, first of all, I should make it clear that these eras are related one to the other. It is like a chain. And had the Soviets not invaded Afghanistan, there would not have been the Soviet-backed fundamental, the US-backed fundamentalist, and the current Taliban. But from our point of view, the real tragedy began in Afghanistan, obviously with the Soviet invasion. But everything got worse, especially towards women, when the fundamentalists took the power. And that was in 1992, that there were eight parties from the very beginning started fighting against each other, and their main and easy target were women. And that was the real tragedy for women, which was unprecedented in the history of Afghanistan.
And these are the groups that are now called the Northern Alliance?
Well, not all of them are now in the Northern Alliance, but some of them are now in the Northern Alliance. One of the groups that is called Hizb Islami Afghanistan, led by Gulbuddin Hikmatyar, is now in the Northern, not in the Northern Alliance, and in fact, he's very much against the Northern Alliance. And he was one of the main parties fighting and killing hundreds of innocent lives during that period between 92 to 96.
And he's also pretty anti-American, isn't he?
Well, at this point, yes, because now he is with Taliban. Although he does not have his military troops with Taliban, but he is supportive towards the Taliban and wants to be like in a coalition with Taliban. But during the Cold War, he was one of the most favorite men for the United States, and he got the most of the military and financial support among the other parties.
And his record of women's rights and human rights, can you comment on that?
He has the worst, among all these parties, he has the worst record of human rights and women's rights. Not only when he, along with other groups, took the power in Afghanistan in 1992, but even in Peshawar, a northern city in Pakistan that he was based, a lot of crimes and atrocities happened. He killed, if not hundreds, tens of intellectuals in Peshawar, including he was in the assassination of our founding leader, Mina. He was the one who helped KGB in her assassination.
So the Taliban are today, at least in terms of the laws that they have enacted in Afghanistan, are the most oppressive regime that Afghanistan has seen, at least legally, the laws that have been put into place against women. And so Rawa says that the Northern Alliance are no better in terms of their human rights record. Yet today the United States is supporting the Northern Alliance to advance its war in Afghanistan. Should Afghans be very afraid, and if so, why? Especially in terms of the fact that the United States is using Afghans' fear and disgust with the Taliban to advance its agenda in Afghanistan. Should Afghans be afraid of the Northern Alliance taking over the country as they did in the early 90s?
The people of Afghanistan are already terrified of the Northern Alliance being the part of any future government in Afghanistan, as they would not forget the blackest period of 92 to 96. We believe that that is really the blackest period in the history of Afghanistan. And coming back to your question, that what was the worst time, that was really the worst time. And what made it even worse and more tragic, that was kept silent. Not media coverage, not any attention towards the situation, and that was regarded as a legitimate government for Afghanistan. So people would not forget that time. People would not forget that the hospitals, the schools, the museum, the 70 to 80% of the capital city Kabul were destroyed during that time. That so many cases of rape, women's abduction, forced marriages happened during that time. And that would happen again if they take the power, because they have the same nature, and that nature is not going to be changed.
So when these parties, during their civil war, which lasted up to 1996, when they were faced with the Taliban, who appeared in 1996, they retreated and they formed the Northern Alliance, and the Taliban ended up taking over most of the country, and they have been in power over most of the country since 1996. And Rawa has appealed to the international community in terms of solving Afghanistan's problems of war and fundamentalism of Taliban and Northern Alliance. What has that appeal been to the international community, and how has it changed after September 11th?
Rawa had warned in the early 80s, when many different countries like Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Iran, United States, France started supporting financially and militarily the fundamentalists, that they're going to be very dangerous phenomenon. Not only for the people of Afghanistan, not only for that region, but for the whole world. And Rawa had anticipated the events, the incidents such as 11 September, that with the nature that those fundamentalists had and have, they even would not care about the countries that once created and supported them. And there would be a slap on their faces, as we would say in Persian. And unfortunately, that happened. I mean, no one really listened to that. And this might be just the first sign. We don't know that what else is going to happen in these countries. And obviously, already, once again, the people of Afghanistan are the victims.
So Rawa had appealed, as I understand it, to the United Nations for many years to come in and solve the problem somehow, perhaps through peacekeeping forces. Is that true? And is there more to it than that, in terms of long-term changing of the society in Afghanistan, long-term moving away from fundamentalism? Has that appeal changed after September 11th to international bodies such as the United Nations?
Not really. Rawa has been calling for years for United Nations intervention in Afghanistan by having its peacekeeping force in order to disarm the different armed groups in Afghanistan, as well as to sanction, maybe militarily, the countries that supply arms in financial support to the Taliban and to the Northern Alliance.
Such as Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates,
Pakistan, Iran, Russia, India, that these last mentioned countries are supportive towards the Northern Alliance. As we believe that if they really want to seek a solution, a real solution towards solving the problems in Afghanistan, the first step is to sanction, again militarily, the countries that support them.
So you mean stopping the weapons sales?
Yes, the weapons sales or any financial or any other support that these countries gave to the either to the Taliban or to the Northern Alliance. And then these groups should be disarmed inside Afghanistan, because as long as they are armed, as long as they are supported by other countries, they're not going to stop fighting. That isn't their nature. They love fighting. And you can't stop the tragedies in Afghanistan.
What is Rawa's position on the bombing campaign by the United States, especially in the context of the claim that the bombing campaign by the United States is specifically aimed at getting rid of the Taliban?
Again, it is so unfortunate that all of the attention towards Afghanistan came just after the 11th September. Before that, it was the largest forgotten tragedy in the world. And all of a sudden, it was just after the 11th September that, it was just after that incident that the world realized that they're not very good people.
Right.
That it's now that they claim that this is not a legitimate or appropriate government or regime for the people of Afghanistan. And for that, we need to get rid of them. And unfortunately, get rid of them is by bombing, which we welcome the combat against terrorism. And in fact, this combat should have been started years ago because of the preventing incidents such as 11 September. And obviously, the people of Afghanistan that have been the victims by the same hands for years, which never received any attention, as if people in Afghanistan deserved all those atrocities and crimes, and they're different than the people in other parts of the world. But this combat against terrorism cannot be by bombing this or that country. It should be a really massive campaign. And that is to stop any country that sells arms or supports financially the fundamentalist movements or fundamentalist regimes. For example, right now in Pakistan, just in Pakistan, there are thousands of religious schools with hundreds and thousands of religious students, that each and every one of them are going to be future Osamas. I mean, supposedly if this bombing can get rid of Osama or Taliban or some terrorist camps, again, this does not mean that they have prevented the terrorist incidents in the future. And as far as we know, so far this bombing has had hundreds of civilian casualties, and we don't know what has happened to the terrorist camps or Osama or Taliban, but it is clear that hundreds of innocent people have paid the price.
In addition to the hundreds of people that were directly killed by the bombs, many international aid agencies are talking about the mass starvation of Afghans. About 7 million Afghans are on the verge of starvation today, who were dependent on aid agencies supplying them with food, because Afghanistan has been undergoing a drought for the last few years. And there is, it's a broken country after two decades of war. The bombing is preventing aid from getting to these people, and UNICEF has estimated that 100,000 children will die this winter from starvation because we couldn't reach them with aid. How should the international community respond to this impending disaster that could potentially lead to millions of innocent Afghan deaths?
Immediate humanitarian aid is the first thing that should be done towards helping the millions of people who are on the verge of starvation. It is very easy to prevent that in Pakistan, because we've had, in Afghanistan, because of the bombing Obviously, many of these humanitarian organizations would have trouble getting in. But at least in Pakistan or in Iran or in other countries, neighboring countries, that thousands of refugees have fled after the 11th September, and especially after the U.S. bombing, they also have the same horrible situation as the people in Afghanistan. And it should not be very difficult to these humanitarian organizations to provide those refugees. But just in Pakistan, after the 11th September, more than 100,000 refugees came. Where last year, from the drought and cold and war, we had more than 100,000 refugees coming to Pakistan. This 7 million is really not a figure after the 11th September right. or the U.S. bombing. It was like months ago. And at the time that even Afghanistan was not bombed, the humanitarian organizations could do something significant to help these people not to die. And unfortunately, when like in Pakistan, when RAWA members were distributing humanitarian aid to the refugees, they were told, as that is also on our website, by a refugee, that they did not see anything from the humanitarian organizations. They were told RAWA members that they came several times to the camp, listed the families that needed a shelter, because most of the people lived in very small tents, plastic tents, and they came like several times asking them that, listing the families who needed the shelter. But in several months, they were not provided with any shelter. So and, obviously, I mean, we know that they are concerned. But they should act urgently, and if, I mean, there are problems in Afghanistan, at least in the refugees in Pakistan or in Tajikistan or Iran, I don't think that that would be very difficult to be provided with these humanitarian aids.
So at least for the refugees outside of Afghanistan, it's impending that the aid should reach them. Well, I want to talk a little bit about this issue of women's rights and RAWA's connection and their work on women's rights issues. When the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979, one of the pretexts that was used to come into Afghanistan was this notion that the Soviet Union was coming in to liberate Afghan women from fundamentalism. Today, the United States government and supporters of the bombing campaign in Afghanistan seem to be using RAWA's documentation of fundamentalist oppression of women to justify its bombing campaign, which is supposed to get rid of the Taliban. Can you comment on this manipulation of women's issues by foreign occupiers and foreign interventionists in Afghanistan?
First of all, I should say that although during the Soviet invasion and the puppet regime, there were claims that we improved the women's situation in Afghanistan, but that was not true because the situation of women in Afghanistan was really beginning to improve in early 20th century. And during the former king or during the other, the first president or before even the former king, women had their very basic rights as getting education. We had women even in the government or the right to work. And even the government in some part forced people to send their children, especially women, girl children, to school. The Soviets claimed that it was just during that time that the women's situation in Afghanistan got improved. They were trying to give some of the rights to the women in Afghanistan that are obviously okay in Western societies, but they are not acceptable in our societies. You really cannot bring all those changes overnight. And they wanted to bring like overnight changes. That the people, yeah. I mean, if people in Afghanistan, if there are some families that were not affected or they had not lost a family member during the Soviets or they had not a family member in the prison tortured by the that Soviet-backed regime, but just because of these, overnight changes, people would not forget that time. For example, they, you know, wanted to give some like so-called liberties of, for example, having a boyfriend or I don't know, dancing in the nightclubs, which are not acceptable in that society. You really need to start from the very basic things, like giving them education, what Rawa has been doing. That is really the first step, the first stone, in order to give them any awareness. They never made women to realize their real potential. And that's not women's liberty. But unfortunately, as Afghanistan was the largest forgotten tragedy, obviously the women's issue also was the largest forgotten tragedy after the fundamentalists. And again, it was just after the 11th September that all of a sudden the U.S. realized that, well, this is not an appropriate situation for women in Afghanistan to live, and this should be changed, and we should get rid of this regime by bombing that country.
Well, ever since Rawa's website came into being and people started discovering outside of Pakistan and Afghanistan who Rawa was simply by surfing the internet and discovering that there is this organization of Afghan women fighting this kind of fundamentalism, fighting for women's rights in Afghanistan. Rawa's popularity has just increased tremendously internationally. Yet Rawa does not receive any support from governments, especially international governments. And why is that? Would Rawa accept governmental aid if it was offered?
The reason that Rawa does not enjoy support, governmental support, or at least the regular governmental support, is because of it is firmed political standpoints, and sometimes also the word revolutionary in its name, which we have always made it very clear that in a country like Afghanistan, which is very much male-dominated and fundamentalist-belighted, the existence of a women organization, an independent women's organization itself, is revolution. Not that Rawa is a violent organization, not that Rawa is a pro-armed struggle organization, but I think that sometimes maybe certain governments or NGOs would think that Rawa is a pro-armed struggle organization or violent. Whenever we have approached to get support, financial support, they've openly told us that if you change this or that policy, we might be able to give you some financial support. Or once we approached the British embassy in Pakistan, they said that if you change this word in your name, then we might be able to give you some support. So I think that Rawa would not mind getting support by the government, as long as it is does not compromise with its policies. I mean, why should not we get those supports if we're not made to change anything? But, I mean, that has not been possible so far.
Well, what if tomorrow the United States government decided to support Rawa and decided to promote Rawa as a viable piece of a future coalition government in Afghanistan? Two-part question. That future government, coalition government, would be a government that would have to include moderate elements of the Taliban and the Northern Alliance, because that's what the United States is saying. Would Rawa accept that? And how would the U.S. government support of Rawa affect Rawa's credibility amongst Afghans?
Well, first of all, I think it's also important to know, what do they mean by the moderate Taliban? If that moderate Taliban can be like, for example, the foreign minister of the Taliban, because those days that they were talking about, including the moderate Taliban in this Loya Jirga process, we also heard that the foreign minister defected and he was willing to join the Loya Jirga. But I don't think that that was very accurate news. But anyway, I mean, if they mean moderate Taliban like him, we don't think that he would be the moderate Taliban, because first of all, he is the representative, the main representative of the Taliban, as if the foreign minister. And he's the one who believes that the international community should help Taliban to build another stadium where they could carry on amputation and executions, as he has stated in Cyrus Shah's documentary, Beneath the Veil. But one can also not claim that each and every person fighting with Taliban, fighting with the Northern Alliance, or as criminal as all of them. I mean, among the Taliban, there are 70 to 60%, what I read here in the paper, who were forced to fight with them, or with them just because of the money. Mm-hmm. And ideologically, they are not with them. So we don't know. I mean, if the very lower levels of the Taliban could be included, and they are the moderate Taliban who did not have their hands in the blood of the people of Afghanistan. I think that cannot be a main question for the people of Afghanistan. The same is, for example, our policy towards those who were with the puppet regime at the time. That now some of them writing us letters, and they know that that was a mistake. At that time, they did not realize it, because some people were just deceived, you know, by going and joining with them. And I think that the same is now with the Taliban or some elements of the Northern Alliance, were just because deceived or just because of the money, were with them, not that ideologically they were, not that they did not have their hands in the blood of the people. Whenever we talk about these groups, we mean their main leaders and commanders who are criminals, and they should be brought into the International Court of Law. They should not be included by any means in any future government of Afghanistan. And I don't think that Rao would take part in a coalition government that these criminals were included. The criminals that are known to everyone, they should be, Rao has been calling for years, that they should be brought into the International Court of Law and not back to the government, future government of Afghanistan.
So if tomorrow the United States were to promote Rao, would that be, how would that affect Rao's credibility amongst Afghans?
Rao has as his policies, and it would have the same policies. For these policies, we're called radical, we're called leftist, we're called communist, we're called Maoist, and so many other labels. If they support us with all these, you know, policies that we have, they know that we cannot compromise. I think that is what clear to the U.S. government, to everyone, that Rao will never compromise with his policies. And if they support us with our policies of being anti-fundamentalist, for democracy, for freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of belief, for human rights and women's rights, and obviously we have always exposed the countries that have supported this or that fundamentalist group in Afghanistan, I don't think that we would mind. I mean, if they support us with all our policies, but I don't think that that would be possible.
So actually, leading from that,
I just want to say that if with all those policies they support us, I think that this would be a great victory to Rao.
Absolutely.
But
there would be revolution in the United States,
yes,
if that happened.
Yes.
So in terms of the labels that Rao has the distinction of having, having worked in contact with Rao for the past year, I have heard time and again these very interesting labels that are slapped onto Rao with the intention of discrediting them, many of them from Afghan groups or from other Muslim groups. For example, if Rao criticizes the Taliban, they're called pro-Northern Alliance. If they criticize the Northern Alliance, they are called pro-Taliban. If they are promoting women's rights, they're called communist or Maoist. If they are calling for secular government, they're infidels. You know, their public demonstrations earns them the name prostitutes. What, you know, and Rao is labeled as being too radical, too divisive, because they don't compromise with their policies. What is Rao's response to this constant discrediting by other groups, and why do fellow Afghan groups discredit and label Rao so much and don't have a sense of collaboration with Rao?
I think that first of all these accusations, I mean really different accusations, come to Rawa because Rawa is really none of them. The leftists label Rawa as the right, a right-wing organization. The you know, conservatives label Rawa as a left-wing organization. Taliban, as you mentioned, you know, say that we are with the Northern Alliance. The Northern Alliance say that we should be with the Taliban and should have affiliation with a Pakistani government. Otherwise, how we can work in Pakistan, have demonstrations and all that. But obviously, Rawa is an independent organization with its policies that it has had for years. And obviously would have those policies for years. And for that, it really does not care for all these labels. And really all these labels so far have not reached anywhere because we're true in our policies. Those are for freedom, for democracy, for human rights, and for women's rights. And we don't really care what do they label us. I mean, if they think that these are too radical, as for example, Ms. Seema Wali in one of her interviews in, well, not interview, but Washington Post had an article on Rawa, and she said that Rawa does not represent the Afghan norms. We don't know what is the Afghan norms. And because we're for freedom, because we're for democracy, because we're for rights, we do not represent the Afghan norm, because those are not considered Afghan norms. Afghan norms are always women in burqa, women at home, women treated as half of human being, and, well, basically, men and women both, always the victims of the fundamentalists. Are those Afghan norms from her point of view, that Rawa does not, and for that is an extreme left? Let us be extreme left and radical in order to defend that country and people if they think that these are too extreme and left.
So one of the other criticisms against Rawa is that because Rawa criticizes the Northern Alliance, they don't want minorities in the government because they criticize the Taliban, they don't want a Pashtun representation. There are ethnic issues, issues of ethnic tensions inside Afghanistan, because of course Afghanistan is comprised of many different ethnicities, and the Taliban comprise the Pashtuns, who are one of the largest groups. 40% of the country are Pashtuns. What is the ethnic makeup of Rawa's members? Do they represent, ethnically at least, the myriad ethnic groups in Afghanistan?
Members of Rawa, that we have around 2,000 core members, have come really from very diverse backgrounds and ethnic groups. It does not represent one ethnic group in Afghanistan. And the same that we have always criticized the other fundamentalist groups that, first of all, by using the differences, the ethnic differences or linguistic or religious differences, they want to implement their goals and, you know, divide people of Afghanistan, unfortunately claiming that they represent this or that ethnic group. For example, Taliban always claimed that they represent Pashtuns, which is obviously not true. Or the Northern Alliance representing Tajik or Uzbeks, which obviously is not true. So Rawa represents very many different ethnic groups. We have Hazaras among us, we have Pashtuns, we have Tajiks, we have Uzbeks, we have Pashayi, Nuristani, people coming from the very remote areas of Afghanistan among Rawa.
Going back a little bit to the different labels that Rawa is called, the one that keeps coming up a lot just in my work with Rawa for the past year is that Rawa must be a communist organization. And in my work with Rawa, I have never heard a Rawa statement or seen anything on Rawa's website or heard anything from a Rawa member that makes any claims about the economic structure of a future government of Afghanistan that Rawa may envision. Does Rawa discuss economic models of development in any future economic, in any future stable and peaceful Afghanistan? And if so, what kinds of models are those?
I don't think that Rawa so far has actually discussed about the future economic infrastructure, or what Rawa, what kind of economic infrastructure Rawa would have want. Maybe this is an issue that Rawa should discuss at this point, because everyone is talking about the infrastructure in Afghanistan, and obviously if Rawa is part of any future government, it should have had own agenda on the not only economic but also other structures in Afghanistan. I think that so far we have just talked about a country that should be based on freedom that I mentioned before, or secular democracy and human rights and women's rights, which obviously I think that any economic a structure that Rawa would want should guarantee that people in Afghanistan should live equally, not that all the starvation and the lack of education or lack of basic healthcare services that we have been witnessed in Afghanistan, not only after the war but also before that, should happen again. Especially lack of education. At least that should be the most important issue, that the future government should ensure that everyone can get an education in Afghanistan. That the economic situation should not be an obstacle for majority of the population to be deprived of getting education.
In today's global economic model, we see countries, for example, one example that comes to my mind is East Timor, which recently experienced a UN-sponsored referendum after 25 years of occupation by Indonesia. Today we're seeing the World Bank, we're seeing international lending agencies and development corporations that have sort of taken part in a redevelopment of East Timor. Now, Afghanistan's history as being a country which has long fought any kind of foreign presence or domination might lead one to imagine that in a future Afghanistan, even though that sounds like a premature thing to discuss right now, but in any kind of a future Afghanistan, how would Afghans, in your opinion, respond to economic establishment by foreign corporations and foreign foreign development models in Afghanistan? Because, of course, we live in this world that's supposedly becoming more and more global, with neoliberal policies dictating an interdependence in many different countries. I don't know if this is too premature to discuss, but I imagine, I recently read an article with the World Bank already promising to aid reconstruction in Afghanistan. How do you think Afghans would react to the presence of foreign corporations?
I think that to be the puppet regime, that is one issue that cannot be accepted by the people of Afghanistan. To be dominated by another country, but to have a cooperation, to be held by international community economically and financially, especially after being in war for more than two decades, which as a result of that, everything is lost in Afghanistan. And in fact, without international community, mm-hmm. I don't think that Afghanistan would be able to, the people in Afghanistan or any future government in Afghanistan would be able to rebuild Afghanistan. We definitely need international cooperation and their support, but not the support should not be in a way or in term of having Afghanistan as a puppet country and just because of their own interests, which that can be very different than just helping and supporting a country. And obviously people can simply distinguish that whether they are puppets, whether they are invaded once again, or they're just helped to rebuild their country.
Many people have talked about the fact that the United States spent billions and billions of dollars in the 80s to fund these jihadis, these men who now, some of whom comprise the Northern Alliance, including Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. Billions of dollars of aid have flown into Afghanistan in terms of weapons sales and military training. Again, today we're seeing the Northern Alliance being helped by the United States, by Russia, by China, by India. It seems that today, Afghanistan, just as in the past few decades, is constantly being flooded with elements of destruction. What do you, or Rawa in general, feel about some sort of reparations from the international community to undo the damage that has been inflicted with foreign supplied weapons over the last two decades? Reparations would be, you know, no strings attached aid, just like when British colonies were made independent, they received reparations just to undo the damage hundreds of years, perhaps, of colonialism.
I'm not quite sure about what you mean by undo the damage. Or I'm not sure if I got the core.
In terms of the destruction that's happened, like for example, in the early 90s, Kabul was destroyed by mostly American-supplied weapons. You know, we had a New York Times reporter, John Burns, who talked about how ordinary Afghans were coming to him and were saying, "Why is it that Americans are allowing these men to fire these American-supplied weapons into Afghanistan?" So, in terms of making up for the damage, mm-hmm. Some sort of call for reparations, is that something that Rawa talks about?
I'm sorry, I'm still not clear about it.
A call for no strings-free aid, not just loans, not just financial aid, but. How do you say reparations? What's a
I think I'm not sure about the
okay. The word reparations is just basically it's money that's a gift aid, you know, to say that we spend billions of dollars to help damage the country. Here's billions to help reconstruct, but it's not loans, it's not contracts with construction companies. It's just money.
Right. I think that. The answer would be what I said about the previous question, that if that money is just to rebuild the country, I mean, if these countries are kind enough to offer such amount of money just to rebuild the country, obviously no one would mind taking that or using that in rebuilding Afghanistan, and I think we would be very thankful. Mm-hmm. But if that is once again to the fundamentalists, to the elements that would plunge Afghanistan and the people into a deeper misery just because of these countries to be able to maintain or implement their interests in Afghanistan, then that is a different issue.
Yeah. Maybe I want to ask you some questions about Rawa and maybe a few personal questions, if you don't mind. In terms of the kind of threat that Rawa faces and security issues if its members are caught. If Rawa is included in some sort of future government in Afghanistan, if yourself or other members of Rawa are included in as representatives of a government, how will that compromise your security?
I think that by the time if Rawa is included in that government, which Rawa definitely wants a democratic government or relatively democratic government, and I think that would be the only government that we would be ready to take part. Obviously, we cannot take part in a government that is led by the fundamentalists or a fundamentalist regime. Then the situation is different, and the security issue for Rawa is different.
Right.
Maybe by that time we do not have to be as a totally secret organization as we are today, and can conduct our activities
more in public,
public and openly, which might be one of the issues that it is a bit early to talk about.
Right.
But it is just that if we achieve that ideal society, that women can be part of that, and we do not have the fundamentalists, we do not have all these threats, then we don't have to be in secret.
Does Rawa have relationships with other women's movements in the world, in different, international conflicts, in some conflicts, for example, in Yugoslavia, in Africa, in Israel, Palestine? Does Rawa have relationships with other women's organizations similar to Rawa?
Well, after 1997, when the first time we started our website and established contacts with people around the world, we are in contact with hundreds of women's organizations. But most of these contacts are through the email or our website. So maybe in some of the countries who were in war and conflict or still are, which we would wish to have more contacts with them, but maybe one of the main issues is because they may not have access to internet or email, or technology is the main issue that we cannot be in contact with them as we can be maybe in some other women's groups in this country or in Europe, or the countries that people can, all these organizations can easily have access to internet, which right nowadays that is the only tool that connects the world. Which we always wish that we could have more contacts in cooperation with the women's organizations who have who work and live in a similar situation that Rawa does, but we're also very proud that we have the contacts with other women's organizations, feminist organizations, and in these countries, and we enjoy their support and solidarity in many different ways, which so far we have seen the impact in saving maybe thousands of lives in Afghanistan, or educating thousands of children in Afghanistan by their financial support, or any other support that they have had.
So you've been a member of Rawa for most of your adult life, and it's a very difficult life for a member of an underground revolutionary organization, who faces so much security problem, who faces opposition by these incredibly powerful armed fundamentalist groups. What keeps you going, and what keeps other members of Rawa going?
It has a lot to do with the situation, because when you live in a country that you see your people having lost everything, their moral and material values, and you see your women, the women in your country that are going through the most horrible experiences that one can imagine that can happen to a human being, I think that if you have a little bit of consciousness, you cannot keep quiet and silent. You really need to do something. I think this is the main reason that so many women, educated women, committed suicide in Afghanistan, because they did not have a contact with an organization like Rawa. And they found themselves totally helpless and hopeless and out of no option. They committed suicide. And I think that I might have been one of them had I not this contact with Rawa, and had I not worked with Rawa. Because, again, when you think about your people, about your country, and all the horrible tragedies happening there, and you always think about it, and without doing anything, you definitely would end up with psychological and mental problems. But when you do something, and you know that that is effective, that that can save lives, obviously you can gain energy and continue with that. So that is the main point. But also, I think that we are inspired by our other members. Maybe one is inspired by the other, or obviously we are all inspired by the founding leader of Rawa, Mina. In fact, it was Mina who always was telling other Rawa members that even if she was not among us one day, others should continue what she started. And also, it is very strengthening and heartfelt that we have the support of international community. I think when you see the support of especially women all over the world, like some of the cases that we were talking last night, of women who would work in order to raise awareness and raise financial support for people going to hunger strike because of raising money for RAWA, or, for example, the committed supporters that we have in this country, like Afghan Women's Mission or yourself or Steve, our other supporters in the East Coast. That is really such a source of hope and energy. And it's really important to know that you are not alone, that there are other people who care, who listen, and who help and support in any way that they can.
So I think I'll sort of end here with maybe one last question that you probably hear all the time, but I think I want to ask it anyway. What can ordinary people who believe in RAWA's vision for Afghanistan and just in general RAWA's model for democracy, freedom, for women's rights, what can these ordinary people who are not in the government or the military do to help RAWA?
There is actually a section on our website that says how people can help, that many different ways are suggested, some concrete and practical ways. But people can maybe get involved mainly in two ways. Financial support, that is always the most meaningful and practical way to help, especially in this situation that we have the humanitarian crisis and refugee crisis. And that is by supporting RAWA's educational projects, RAWA's humanitarian projects, or healthcare services. Especially at this point, political steps or involvement are also very much important. Maybe people by writing letters to their representatives at the government, maybe to the Congress representatives, to the senators, can put the pressure that would be difficult for the government or for organizations like United Nations to ignore that. If the pressure is really in a significant way by the people, I don't think that the governments or organizations would that easily ignore it. And the main issues that they can ask them from our point of view should be, about the bombing, that this cannot do the job, that if this is a real combat against terrorism, that should be done by stoppage of any financial and military support to the countries that harbor terrorism or terrorists or fundamentalists, by disarming the groups in Afghanistan, by putting pressure on the countries that support the armed groups in Afghanistan, by putting pressure on these governments not to make the same mistake, to include the Northern Alliance, knowing their records of crimes and atrocities, that women should be part of any future government of Afghanistan. I think these are the most important things that people can write to their representatives at the government. And I think that you can maybe give more concrete examples or ways that how people can get involved, as you've had many more experiences of how one person as an individual can do in Afghan Women's Mission is such an incredible example of that.
Yeah, actually, maybe we should end with the websites of the two organizations. To find out more about RAWA, www.rawa.org. If you visit any website in the world, that's the one to go to. It has been the website that has inspired most of us. Most of us who are working with RAWA now found out about RAWA through their website first. And for American supporters of RAWA, Afghan Women's Mission is a good place to start in terms of financial help. www.afghanwomensmission.org.
Thank you.